This week on Making Contact.
You can't sit down and wait for stigma to disappear before you start talking about HIV.
It's still very unfair when people die just because they are citizens of certain countries.
It's about adopting effective, pragmatic approaches that empower people and respect their rights.
It's been 25 years since the start of the AIDS epidemic. In that time, the number of those living with HIV has grown to a staggering 40 million worldwide. What was once a fatal disease is now a treatable condition. But advocates say more needs to be done to protect the rights of those infected, from universal access to treatment to the elimination of stigma. This week on Making Contact, a special collaboration with Human Rights Watch, we'll hear stories from positive people and activists in the places worst hit by the epidemic. I'm Pauline Bartolone, your host this week on Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information.
I don't know anymore when I first heard about AIDS. I know my friend Chuck Roberts died in like 1985 of AIDS, and I can't imagine...
10 years ago in 1996, I lived in international house, and my friend was from Bulgaria. And his brother was HIV infected.
That was, so at that point, when I heard, that was where I was, holding the phone and trying to keep a straight face. And I kept telling him, please just come home.
The first time I heard AIDS was back home in Manipur. I was heavily into drug addiction, so...
Studying at seminary, we had someone who came to speak to us about it, and it just seemed all so distant and awful.
It didn't ring any bells to me, you know. I was just like, whatever HIV is, it will come and go.
We had something like 400 people in the country who were HIV positive. Things have changed.
And I never thought that one time I'll be looking at myself in the mirror and saying I'm looking at a person with HIV, actually.
Life is the most important. It's not about treatment, or it's not about activism, or it's not about fighting or arguing with the government. It's about saving people's life. My name is Lun Gangte. I live in Delhi and India, and I coordinate for the Collaborative Fund for South Asia, that looking after the India, Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and I'm the founder and the current president of Delhi Network of People Living with HIV AIDS. In 1997, when I came to Delhi and go through my drug rehabilitation program, I go for HIV testing. By the time that I suspect myself that I would be HIV positive, so I go and test that. And the day I got my HIV positive status, it was very shocking. I don't know how to explain it. It was just like when we watch a TV, we just press a pulse and everything stops, stands still, like that. I was a pulse for about 2-3 days, and later on I talked to myself, and now I'm HIV positive. No matter what I cry, no matter what I do, no matter what I did, I'm going to live with this HIV for the rest of my life. But if I want to live this life a little bit longer and a little bit more quality life, there's something which I can do. Which I can do is that I can stop using drugs. So when people ask me about my HIV status, how do you feel about your status? I said, for me, HIV is saving my life, I said. Had I not knew my status then in 1997, I might still continue to use drugs and died by now. If I look back home in Manipur where I live, 95, 96, 97% of my friends are already 6 feet under. They've already expired, they've already died. After my drugging days, during my rehabilitation day, what I want to do in my mind is to help people who are like me, who are a crook, who are a junkie, whom people think they're useless, good for nothing. Right after 2 months of my diagnosis, I start talking, I start disclosing my status to the whole world, and everyone know I was in the print media and TV, radio, everywhere. we began to see that there are lots of NGOs and CBOs and FBOs, and people are every day we see people are talking on behalf of the people living with HIV/AIDS. But we tell to our friend, to each other, what about us? We have mouth, we have teeth, we have brain, we have tongue, we can breathe, we can eat, but why can't we talk our issue by ourselves? So we find some similarities, some commonalities among our HIV positive peers, and that's how we come to form our Delhi Network of Positive People. The main problem for India is that we have the highest number of people living with HIV/AIDS in the world, that is 5.7 million, surpassing the all-time number one, South Africa, which stands today at 5.6 million. And we have about more than 10 companies producing cheap antiretroviral drugs. So we got the cheapest drugs, the best drugs in the cheapest price. But ironically, what makes me angry and what makes me pissed off is that only 36,000 people are receiving antiretroviral treatment. We have the manufacturing company in India, we have the people, we have the medicine, but the people and the medicine are not meeting. I believe there is a lack of strong political will and political commitment. The biggest challenge is for me is to bridge this wide gap of treatment gap. I said the 36,000 people are on treatment today, and 700,000 people are in immediate need of ARV right now. So to bridge this gap is the most challenging task. We have to mobilize, we have to sensitize, and we have to push the government. We have to fight with the multinational companies who are only looking for profit rather than saving life.
I'm Father J.P. Heath. I'm an Anglican priest. I live in Johannesburg, South Africa. I've been HIV positive for a number of years, and I'm the General Secretary of ANARELA. That's the African Network of Religious Leaders Living with or Personally Affected by HIV and AIDS. I had been in a relationship for 4 years, and I knew nothing about HIV really when I went into that relationship. And I had got myself tested at various points, and always the test results came back as HIV negative, and so I just assumed that whatever I was involved in my relationship was safe, and that was fine. But when my partner started getting sick, then I felt that it was necessary for me to actually go and get tested again. And that's when I found that I was HIV positive. And the sadness was that from everything that I knew, I didn't believe that I was going to be able to be there for my son as he grew up, because I just perceived HIV to be a death sentence. And the doctor who saw me, he was absolutely fabulous, and he just said, people only have two responses to finding that they're HIV positive. Either they can accept it, and it becomes a life-changing experience where they make every moment of their life count from here on out, or they can't accept it, and they die even before they're buried. I had to look closely at my life, and I really have tried to make it count since then on. I had to go to a public hospital to go and get my medication and things like that. Now, you know, Anglicans are doctors and nurses and patients, and, you know, they're everywhere. So the fact that I was sitting on a little bench waiting to be seen for HIV trials with everybody else, people very soon understood that I was HIV positive, even though I wasn't speaking about it. And that had a tremendous impact on my ministry, because first a trickle and then a stream and later a river of people started arriving at my door looking for help and support, because they were too frightened to speak to their own priest about the fact that they were HIV positive. But they knew that because I was HIV positive, I wasn't going to reject them. I know of one incident in my congregation which I heard of some months after I had disclosed my status to the parish. of one gentleman who said to one of the ladies in the parish, I think I'm going to have to leave this church, you know, because the priest has AIDS. And she took her umbrella and started beating him over the head and said, don't you dare speak about Father that way. So even though I wasn't present, I was being vociferously defended. You know, one of the main stigma issues around HIV is the fact that it is still very strongly associated with morality. And in a society where religious leaders are looked upon as being bastions of moral living, it becomes very difficult for them to live openly with their HIV status. The church as a whole started to approach HIV from the concept of HIV is God's punishment for sin, or AIDS is God's punishment for sin. And even though the church has now repeatedly made statements moving away from that position, it's not yet a lived experience of the church where people can feel comfortable and open about being HIV positive.
My name is Beatrice Were, and I'm an AIDS activist from Uganda. I'm a mother living with HIV. I have known that I'm HIV positive for the last 14 years, and I work with ActionAid International. I became an AIDS activist mainly because of my personal encounter with HIV. I lost my husband to AIDS when I was 25 years, and I faced a lot of injustice. I faced so much stigma and finger pointing. My in-laws attempted to grab my property and to take away my children from me, believing that everything, including my children, belonged to them. So I fought back and managed to overcome all of this. And based on my experience, I decided to speak out, fight the stigma, reach other women in a situation like mine, so that change can happen.
Whatever happens to any family, ultimately, the woman bears the burden. Women are disproportionately affected. Even if you are not infected and they are infected, then your world comes either to an end or you begin to run around to make sure that things work. So for us, the women hold the economy of the families, they hold the well-being of our country and of our children. My name is Morolake Odetoyinbo. I live in Lagos, Nigeria. I work primarily as an HIV treatment educator. I guess you can call me an activist. What we all know for a fact is that 10% of the total population of people living with HIV all over the world are Nigerians. And we have 4 to 4.2 million Nigerians living with HIV. So Nigeria is greatly infected and affected. Coupled with the fact that we are the largest black country in the world, that sounds to me like if we have a problem in this country, then we do have a problem in the black world. Which is why I think for us, it's beyond rhetorics. In 1998, when I tested positive, this was a long way from treatment for us. And that was when people were saying things like, Africans cannot use ARVs because we cannot tell the time. If we don't have clocks, how do we know what time to take our drugs? You know, people saw HIV as an infection of the poor and downtrodden. They didn't think it was something that affected your so-called middle-class society, which, fortunately or unfortunately, well, unapologetically, is where I found myself growing up. But what I realize is it doesn't matter what your class is, HIV affects us all the same. I was seeing a lot of prevention messages, but the question then is, what do you do with an HIV positive test result? Which is why I started working on access to treatment. 2001, we had 10,000 people on treatment. Today, we have over 100,000 people on treatment. And in every state in this country right now, there is one treatment center. you know, this can, and this has happened because we just haven't kept quiet. Today, if you're a woman living with HIV, you can access PMTCT free, which means your antenatal is free, your delivery is free, drugs for you and the baby is free. And so I'm incredibly excited and proud that I was one of those people who was involved in making that happen. It's still, I mean, there's just so much we can do and we need to do using the media. You know, who needs treatment? How should it be done? What do we do? Where are the free treatment centers? What I believe is you can't sit down and wait for stigma to disappear before you start talking about HIV. It's you talking that's going to make stigma disappear. Those of us living with HIV are the ones who will have to stand up to fight and ask for our rights and demand that things happen. So how has HIV affected my life? I think it has encouraged me to be the very best I can. I have dared to take my life in my hands. I have dared to do what I thought I couldn't do. So I really didn't have that period. I didn't have the opportunity of feeling sad or being overwhelmed by that result. And when people cried, I always wondered, were you crying for me or for yourself? I mean, if you have to cry, maybe you're crying for yourself because you're thinking, oh, this could be me. But I'm sure you're not crying for me because there's nothing about me to make you sorrow. No, no.
We'll hear more from AIDS activists in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. This program is a special collaboration with Human Rights Watch. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org.
A lot has been changed since the very start of the epidemic. At the moment, everyone, almost everyone, understands that HIV/AIDS is a serious issue. But what is still lacking is what to do next. I'm Andrei Klepikov. I'm Ukrainian and live in Ukraine all my life. I work for International HIV/AIDS Alliance. From the very beginning, when we started the program in Ukraine, it was late 2000 with just a couple of people. And now we work in every part of Ukraine. 10, 15 years ago, it was a problem not associated with Ukraine as a country, with Ukrainian people, with my neighbors and friends. But now I think everyone in Ukraine knows people who are HIV infected, who are suffering from all the virus or people attitudes to HIV infected. It was a very difficult economic situation, political situation in late 90s. It was a very poor country. But at the same time, right in 1996-1997, it was highest jump of HIV/AIDS epidemic in Ukraine through injecting drug users. And some of my friends and neighbors who got involved into injecting drug users became HIV infected. So it's not an external problem for me. It had a lot of implications to my life. At that time, there was no appropriate response, no prevention, no information. So epidemic spread really rapidly through drug user population. Ukraine is experiencing one of the fastest HIV growing rate in Europe and all the region of Europe and Central Asia. and prognosis are not so optimistic as well. Current Ukraine's prevalence rate, which is now 1.4%, could be between 1.9 and 3.5% by 2014. Now it's very decisive moment to address appropriate response. Otherwise, epidemic may leak out to general population, and Ukraine has no resources to address it. Since Alliance got involved in early 2004, we managed to scale up ARV treatment from almost nothing. At that time, about 100 patients were on ARV treatment, to currently more than 3,000 people. So it's a huge increase in 30 time over the period less than 2 years. So I'm really proud to say that today this work has achieved a key outcome. The main outcome is that people are not dying from HIV/AIDS. It's currently it's an opportunity to stay alive.
The reason why it's important to keep doing this now is because we've had significant progress at local levels, but we have had no progress at the federal level. My name is Alan Clear. I'm the executive director of the Harm Reduction Coalition. We're based here in New York City in the United States. We had syringe exchange programs start in the late 80s in this country, in the United States. And we know from the research, we know from the evidence, we know from the fact that drug users use syringe exchange, that syringe exchange is probably the most effective HIV intervention for active drug users or active drug injectors. In New York City, we've been doing exchange now for 16 years, 14 of them with the authorization of the State Department of Health, and we've had an enormous impact on drug users, not only in reducing HIV from 50% of injectors down to about 15%, but also getting laws changed so that now there are pharmacy sales of syringes. We have got drug users who were excluded from AIDS care into AIDS care. Most drug users, probably more than any other population, know their HIV status. I think the greatest difficulties for people living with HIV are not always HIV. And for some parts of the country, it's actually getting HIV care, especially if you live in a small town or rural community, and you don't want to be outed as a person living with HIV. It's difficulty getting medical care. For some parts of the country, it's difficult to get AIDS medications. I don't think that's the case in New York City. But we still have too many people who don't know their status. There are barriers to getting tested. I think there's lots of things I'd like to see. I'd like to see the epidemic end. It's not just about a single disease or a single virus. It's about the way people live. It's about access to human rights, civil rights, housing, medical care, health care, mental health care. It's all those things that make people vulnerable. I would like to see universal access to AIDS medications. I'd like to see the targets met that countries have set. I'd like to see universal access to prevention materials. I'd like to see universal access to drug treatment, which countries like Russia are refusing. I'd like to see access to sterile syringes that countries like the US are refusing. I'd like to see a real role for not just people with AIDS, but people who use drugs to play in making sure their voice is heard and making sure that they have a seat at the table to articulate what is going on in their lives, and I want governments to be responsive to that.
When the whole world talk about universal access, our government is still aiming just 180,000 to treat people. So that is what I want to change. This is what we want to change. We want to see that people who need treatment get treatment. It's our fundamental rights to life.
We all hope for new scientific developments in regard to vaccine. So next 10 years should give equal access to appropriate prevention and treatment.
There have been incredible times over the past 25 years where communities have got together and supported each other. But what's so important for me is that as church, we have to understand that the first thing that we are called to is to support people in the environment within which they find themselves.
In the next 10 years, I would really like to see where Africa has become the showcase for the whole world that this problem can be stopped and reversed. Things just have to move.
My name is Joe Amen. I'm the director of the HIV/AIDS program at Human Rights Watch in New York. The AIDS epidemic today affects more than 40 million people in every country of the world. And in countries with high HIV prevalence, mostly in Africa, women in particular are vulnerable and are most affected. In other countries of the world, marginalized populations, gay men, injecting drug users, sex workers, the groups that are pushed to the margins of society that governments don't give information to, discourage from seeking care, and don't really address their health needs are the ones most affected. Clearly, one of the biggest challenges in the world is the lack of access to antiretroviral drugs. In most of sub-Saharan Africa, fewer than 10% of those who immediately need treatment have access to it. And that means that they're going to die within a year or two without access to these medicines. So the biggest problem is scaling up the availability of these medicines and identifying the barriers to getting people to know their HIV status and to getting care. One of the biggest issues that's facing the world right now in relation to AIDS is a need for accountability. Both at a national level, there are governments that are absolutely unaccountable as to how they spend their AIDS money. They're unaccountable to the populations that are most vulnerable, that are most at risk and affected by AIDS. And also at an international level, the international agencies are refusing to set specific targets and to hold themselves accountable to it. We need to have an international goal that every country can buy into, can sign up for, and that we can all monitor the progress towards achieving that goal. I think the most important thing that needs to happen in the AIDS epidemic in the next 10 years or 20 years, or hopefully in the next 2 years, is that governments agree to adopt policies that are science-based and that are rights-based, and that the current trend of ideological and moralistic approaches are abandoned, and a pragmatic vision of turning around this epidemic, and that is the goal. It's not about moralizing about abstinence or about drug use or about sex workers. It's about adopting effective, pragmatic approaches that empower people and respect their rights.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Vinod K. Joes, Sam Alakoya, Severine Bardon, Anderson Allen, Dan Turner, and Ronald Rucker. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. For a CD copy of program number 3306, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Tina Rubio, senior producer, Dorian Taylor, communications manager, and Stefana Petrova, production intern. And I'm your host this week, Pauline Bartolone. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.